Welcome, Green Future Growers, Progressive Radio Network listeners, and anybody who's new to the show. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer, and let's get growing.
Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am just like so excited to introduce this guest because we met on Facebook, and you all know how much I love on Facebook. And she's got a great Facebook group I think you'll be interested in called Organic Living for Moms. So I'm going to encourage you to check that out. And just and she's been very patient with my schedule. So thanks so much for joining us. Here today is Kara Grant. So welcome to the show, Kara.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Well, go ahead and tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
I own a bed and breakfast, and I've been doing that for about 12 years. But originally, I'm in New Mexico, and I was born and raised here in New Mexico. My parents are actually farmers and ranchers here, so I grew up with a really great love for the earth and gardening and things like that. And I have four kids. I actually did homeschool my kids for a large part of their upbringing. My original education is in elementary education, and so I have two boys and two girls. Two of them are married now, and one's in college, and one graduates this year. And so, like I said, I'm 12 years into my bed and breakfast business, and I'm actually more freed up, so I've actually been doing even more gardening. And as you said, I've started this group with Organic Living for Moms because my son actually does he's like a digital marketer, and he was the one who encouraged me to start the group because he's like, man, Mom, there's so many women and people out there who would like some of the knowledge that you have, and I think this would be a great way for you to share it. So that's kind of my background, and then you found me on that group page.
Yeah. So, so many questions. I'm almost like so curious about the bed and breakfast. Like, how's that going? And how did you get into that? And what's that like? Like, what are the challenges of running a bed and breakfast? Totally off topic.
Yeah, I know a little, but not so much. I mean, it was kind of an accident. We had been restoring properties, my husband and I, and we bought an older house in a historic neighborhood here in Albuquerque, and we were living in it. And then we wound up 2 years later buying the one next door. And like I told you earlier, I was home with our four kids, and I told him, I said, well, I'm up every morning fixing breakfast anyways. I might as well, you know, do it for other people. So we started off with just that house, and we've actually done all the restoration work, landscaping, everything around the houses and everything. And it has challenges because it is a business that you're kind of on 24 hours a day. Like, I actually had a phone call yesterday morning, 5 a.m, because everybody's in different time zones and they kind of forget that when they start calling you and you're like, oh gosh, you know, and then you get up and do breakfast. But I have loved, and my kids have pretty much grown up and been raised in it, but I've loved using my personal experiences with, you know, organic cooking and stuff like that through the bed and breakfast. So I've raised my own chickens, and we use our eggs that I raise ourselves that we serve the guests when I make breakfast. Like right now, I've got tomatoes coming like crazy, so a lot of my dishes have our fresh tomatoes in it. I've canned up some jellies, and the guests actually buy that. And so it's a really fun way for me to use some of the things that I enjoy doing and I'm passionate about within my business as well. And like I say, it has its challenges because it is a full-time 24-hour-a-day job. It's almost like, you know, people are like, what are your hours? And I'm like, when are my hours not? but it's a fun business to meet a lot of really neat and interesting people.
Yeah, I feel like your kids probably just got to meet so many cool people growing up that way.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they really did. I mean, like, one of my fun stories was my son. He played the flute, and they had a flautist convention here in Albuquerque, and one of the big performers and people there for the convention was actually staying with us, and he had like an hour off, and he sat and, you know, worked with my son and taught him some more techniques on working with his flute. So, I mean, it's been really an interesting and fun. I mean, my kids have also complained about it because it's almost like, where's our private life? So, So that's kind of the one thing they've kind of are like, oh God, sometimes you get tired of people around all the time too.
You need to like have like a shutdown season where like nobody, you don't take guests for like a month or something.
Yes. Yeah. And again, that's where I do have now a property. It's about 15 minutes away from the bed and breakfast. It's almost 2 acres. And that's where I've expanded my garden. And I've actually expanded my area with more of my chickens and things like that. And I go out there and that's where my quiet place is. I literally just kind of dive in and lose myself for a couple of hours every day so that I can have that kind of away quiet time. Because like I told you, I grew up on a farm and a ranch, so I enjoy people, but I also love my solitude.
Sure, I can totally relate. And, like, I guess part of it, my parents always stayed at bed and breakfast when we were kids. Like, I don't know that we ever went to a hotel, or maybe, like, once or twice. So my mom, I think almost in some way she always wanted to have a bed and breakfast. But I think it was exactly what you're saying, just like always being on call 24/7, like that didn't quite, was a little too much for her. But anyway, yeah. Why don't you tell us about your very first gardening experience? I mean, I guess we grew up on a ranch, but I don't know, want to say anything about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was probably my first, is just growing up. I mean, growing up as a kid, I always remember my parents always to the side of the house always had a amazing big garden. I mean, it was kind of like our playground growing up, you know. There were times where I can say it wasn't a playground when they sent you outside and said, you know, this whole row needs to be weeded. That became not fun, but I had as well three other siblings, so there were four of us. So we always found some unique way to make it fun, which sometimes also got us in trouble. But yeah, that was probably, I mean, some of my favorite things, you know, were like in the evenings as the sun was setting, going out with my dad and him seeing the cantaloupe ready and him pulling out his pocket knife and us just sitting out in the garden and eating a whole cantaloupe together, you know. Yeah. That, I mean, I grew up with that. And I think that's the thing, like me saying, moving out and wanting more land, I you know, I found as I'm older, that longing for that type of life. And, what I grew up with and just the mentality, I guess, I don't know what, just the way that it is so just connected with the earth. I have really been longing for that. So that's why I'm really grateful that, you know, I have a little bit more space to just really pursue that passion, you know, that I love. I mean, I actually enjoy going out and weeding and doing all of that because it just, I don't know, it's just fun to me.
So now, was the place that you grew up, were your parents organic gardeners, or did you learn how to do that later, or it's just always kind of been part of your life, or how did that work out?
You know, the thing about it is that's what my dad, even being in the farming and stuff, he would always say, oh, you know, I'm not an organic gardener and all that. And I would watch him and I'm like, yeah, but Dad, I remember us growing up and him driving the pickup through the field and him getting a shipment of ladybugs and us throwing the ladybugs out into the field. Or he's always been very conscientious of the earth, making sure you know how to care for it correctly, like rotating your crops. And so you don't take all the nutrients out by just continually, you know, planting the same thing and putting the right nutrients back into your soil. And so, I mean, a lot of that I did learn from him. And then, you know, some of the things like making my own compost and stuff like that is just things even I've expanded on just from, you know, my experience growing up and then just continuing on my research and journey on my own.
Okay, can I ask you about compost? Because, like, so I've been building this organic gardening course. I've really been working out this summer. And, like, to me, compost is just, like, this easy extension of like my art. Like I can't even like imagine not composting, but I've been getting a lot of feedback from people I've been talking to that it's not that easy. So like for them, or like people are really struggling, like, what do I keep it with on my counter that's not going to let insects in or ants or flies and things? And like where do you keep it? Because I'm just like, well, we have one container on the counter and one container on the porch, and then I have a compost bin, like, you can practically walk to from the kitchen sink in two steps anyway now, but Like, how does your compost work? Like, what do you keep it in the house? Where do you, how does that look for
It's just
you?
what you said, and it is, I mean, the thing I think people feel it's tricky because you do have to watch. I mean, you have to keep it rotated, but even like with the B&B, I mean, we try to be very green. Any scraps or food left over, I have two buckets, and one is the food just off of the plate. We scrape and put that in one bucket, and I honestly take that out, and that's for my chickens to enjoy. And then the other buckets where I put eggshells and coffee and stuff like that, and that's what I dump into my compost pile. And then, of course, I add to that, you know, other things. Because the one thing, like with the coffee, you can add, you know, some of the leaves you rake up. I mean, it doesn't have to be for your soil, you know, things like that. But the food is what I actually just save and feed to my chickens. And then, like, you can use some of the waste from your chickens to add also to the coffee grounds. I don't feed personally my chickens. I do get oyster shells, but I don't feed them the eggs, because even growing up, we found that the more that you feed them their own eggshells makes them prone to also eat their own eggs. So that's the only reason we've always chosen. And so I just add that to my soil compost, my eggshells then. And yeah, I just have a large trough then outside. So when I move it from inside the house, I just dump everything into that large trough that's covered and keep that then for my soil compost. Does that make sense? I mean, I don't find it that hard at all. You just, it's two buckets, and yeah, you can't leave your buckets.
But what kind of
just
buckets? Like plastic? Because like the one thing we do is like we seem to have like a million Folgers plastic containers and ice cream containers. So like, we use them, but then we end up tossing those down the line, or, you know, so I don't have to like clean anything, but that seems to be like, do you clean yours out? Like, do you have a problem there?
I do. And so what I use is I have big stainless steel cooking pots that I have. I mean, almost like even for canning. And I have a second sink in the B&B, so I leave those actually sitting in the sink, you know, and then just clean them out each day. But they have a lid on top of them that way and everything like that. And then after I dump it, I just use the faucet and just rinse them out and bring them back in the house. Because it is important. You got to keep them rinsed out, because that's when you do accumulate, yeah, those little awful fly buggy things.
But you just do it every day and then, yeah, yeah, see, that's what I think. And we actually, you know, we're kind of very much like you. Actually, the plastic container sits in the house, and that gets the chicken stuff, and then the coffee grounds and the eggshells are the one that's on the porch, which is actually like an old enamel steel bucket that sits out there. So we're very same. And Mike says the same thing about, he doesn't let the chickens eat the eggs. He actually pretty much tries to keep his chickens vegetarians. They don't get to eat any kind of like meat or fish or anything. Well, how about something that grew well this year? What's growing good for you? I know I saw pictures of okra on your Facebook page.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. That grew really well. My tomatoes, cucumbers. I got so many cucumbers. I have canned probably 3 batches of pickles. My kids all love my dill pickles. So they were super thankful, but I'm kind of sick of canning dill pickles. So I actually found a recipe the other day for cucumber jelly. So I think I'm going to try that, but yeah, I got a lot of okra. In fact, I went 1 week where I went up to Oklahoma to visit my grandson, and I didn't have anybody going out and picking it. And of course, okra, you have to keep it picked, because once it gets to a certain level, it's no good, you know. So I went out right after I got back, and yeah, all of them were full of mature. I've got buckets and buckets now of overly mature, and I'm going to save some of it for seeds for next year. But the other thing I've decided, I'm going to try an idea I found, drying it, and I'm going to make it into like fall garlands. And of course, New Mexico chili ristas are really popular, and I think I've got a cool little creative craft idea. I'm going to try to make some of my over mature okra into like a rista.
Well, we're going to have to keep a look on the Facebook page for that. Yeah. I love those chairs that you weave the seats. Those just look, I absolutely love that. What a great idea. And they came out so nice, and I love just the colors and perfect. All right, chili reeds, okra reeds.
Yeah. I saw that, and when I was hanging one upside down, it was my mom, and I was sitting and I saw a chili rista, and I said, "Oh my gosh, mom," I said, "let's make an okra rista." And she said, "Yeah." She said, "After we dry it and everything," she said, "that looks so cool."
Cool. I think that will. So you just sound like such a creative person, and just I love that about you and everything. And it's so funny because I thought you were so young. Like, I thought your kids were toddlers.
No.
So you fooled me there. How about something that you're excited to do different next year, something new you want to try?
One of the things that I think that I want to try different next year, you know, this year, I don't know why it was even, I struggle with it, but it was even worse this year than it's ever been. I had squash bugs so, so bad. And that's the fun thing with my group page. I had somebody tell me, and I don't know about, I know your growing season is different than ours, but they said that they waited until July 1st, right after the 4th of July, to plant their zucchinis and squash, and they didn't have any problems with the squash bugs taking over their vines. And so I think that's something I'm going to try, because I did use the diatomaceous earth is the one thing I like to use that I did find works pretty good, but you just have to stay on top of it every day when you start getting a squash bug infestation. So I think I'm going to try planting. That's one thing I want to try next year doing different, is probably try planting that particular part of my garden a little later to see if that helps with the problem.
Hmm. So, like, are these squash the borers that get into, like, the stems or something different?
They're literally, I don't know the, you know, correct name, but we always call them squash bugs. I mean, they're kind of like a little flat bug, and they lay eggs on the underside of the leaf. And once you start finding those, you can kind of try to squeeze and kill the leaf. But even like the diatomaceous earth, what it does, it'll kill them while they're young. But once they get mature, that doesn't even work. They're just like tenacious little creatures. And what they do is they literally eat the vine. So you'll watch your vine begin to just all of a sudden, it just starts withering. And even the vegetation, like the squash on it, won't completely even mature because the vine's not getting the nutrient to, you know, to supply to the squash. And like I say, you can squish them. I wear gloves and I go out there and start the adult ones squishing them, you know, and everything. But once you start getting an infestation, and what I have even done in the past to deal with them, you know, is literally every single vine, I feel like I go and turn the leaf upside down. If I see eggs on it, I'll just try to start right at that process, you know, eliminating the eggs. But there just comes a certain point, especially if like 2 or 3 days you just aren't on top of it, where they just like take over and then it's done.
Cool. Well, so that's awesome, because somebody did in my Facebook group ask about that, and somebody else was telling they did a very similar thing. She's like, squash them, try to squash them some more, peel them off some more. And she's like, I think my zucchinis I'm gonna sell for $42.95 a pound.
Yeah,
because of all the work that she did, you know.
Mm-hmm. Fighting so much to try to keep them from, and like I say, once they get, and I've talked to them at the extension office and everything, and the big thing they tell me is they say, well, and even my dad had said that, he said, where you planted them this year, move them and plant them in a different place. And so out on my property where my garden is, we have a little house, so where the garden is actually planted, I have kind of like flower bed areas up closer to the house, and that's this year where I planted my zucchini and stuff, because I thought, okay, I'm not even putting them in the same area remotely, even close to where the garden is. And they were worse there than they were for the garden. I was like, what in the world? Because that's the big thing they also say is, you know, to eliminate them, just don't plant squash there the next year again. Because, you know, it's almost like once they're kind of in the soil in that area, that's where they're at, you know. And, yeah, that didn't work this year. So I'm going to try the tip of planting them later and see if that helps. So, Yeah. So if you hear of anybody else that has any other suggestions on these little creatures, feed them my way.
Because lots of people have been, it seems to be a big problem. Because, and like the other thing is, I know I researched this and I'm trying to find where's my research even. Because I remember like somebody talked about, like, I knew you had to like get a, but that was for a squash. It was like a vine boar or something. And like actually cut into the, you know, the, like right at the base of the zucchini plant and like cut into the stem and pull those boars out. And I can't find where I, like, I remember I had links to videos and I wrote a whole thing on it. And I was like, well, where's the blog post? Well, if I didn't write a blog post, where is it? I thought maybe it was an email I answered, but when I go into email and type in squash, it's not coming up. I don't know. I'll have to find it, but yeah, squash seems to be trouble this year for everybody. You are not alone with that one.
Yeah. So, anyways, I mean, once you get a good crop of them, there's some seasons where I've had so much, I'm like, oh, God, I'm just tired of getting zucchini and squash. But this year, I have barely had any. So, I'm like, well, I was like the one lady you said, I'm like, if I get very much and I go to sell them, they're worth $100 a piece.
Well, we didn't have a problem. We got lots of squash and zucchini, but what I want are some of your cucumbers. My poor husband didn't get hardly any cucumbers. My granddaughter's been coming up and be like, where are the cucumbers? Where's a cucumber? Can I get a cucumber? And we just don't, I think it got like three. I don't know why. We had a tough year this year. It was really cold at the beginning of the year. Now we're already getting frost. I feel so bad for him because his corn is just so close and he has the best crop of corn ever, and I don't know if it's going to make it. It's going to be a miracle. So, no. Yeah, we've had a tough year. We've had some things have been great. We've had grapefruit, apples, pears, plums are just to die for. We had the plum tree that bloomed the first time this year, but some other things have just been a challenge. So, but I think that's what gardening's all about, right?
It is. There are some seasons where some things are great. I mean, like your question is so great that it says, you know, what did you, were you finding successful this year? Because every year I found that I garden, it's not always the same that always comes out the best. You know what I mean? It's a different thing every year that is better than, you know, one year it's this. Like last year, I couldn't hardly even get an okra plant to grow. Oh, this year, every single one of them came up, and I've got so much. I'm like, oh, God, I'm so tired of okra. So it's making up for what I didn't get last year.
Well, and next year, you might not have to plant cucumbers at all because you'll have so many pickles.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
That's what I told my husband about green beans because he has, like, I think we have, like, 96 jars of green beans canned at home, and I was like, well, that's two a week. That's, we're going to be hard put to use all those up this year. Maybe you won't need to plant green beans next year. And he was like, what? Are you crazy? So, anyway, how about something that didn't work out so well this season? Or is that the zucchinis?
That's probably mostly the zucchini is the one thing that, you know, was the thing that I really just struggled with. I mean, and like I say, I love zucchini. I love zucchini bread. I was even super excited. My mom had a friend that she shocked them all. She brought what everybody thought was an apple pie to a function, a community function. And everybody was like, oh my gosh, it's the best apple pie. And after the whole pie was gone, she told them all that it was actually zucchini she used instead of apples in the pie. And I was like, oh man, I can't wait to try this with my zucchini. I haven't even gotten enough to make a pie.
Wow, well, I want to get that recipe from her because that would be a great thing to know because we all always have tons of zucchinis and we don't always, I don't always have apples for apple pie at apple pie time. So cool.
I know. So yeah, she's supposed to share that with me. So I'm going to try to share that on my group page as soon as I get that recipe. So yeah.
Before we get to the root of things, let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, gardeners, healthy eaters, vegetarians, and green future growers just like you get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP to support the show and see if you qualify. Over half of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, just like you, green future growers. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP. Or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Hey, Green Future Growers. Did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So you just, it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got, all in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today. And now let's get to the root of things.
All right. Well, we're already at the part that we call getting to the root of things. So do you have like a least favorite activity to do in the garden? Something you just got to force yourself to get out there and do?
Let's see, what is my least favorite activity? Right now it is my little place of, you know, solitude that I enjoy. Probably the least favorite thing I have is just what I was telling you about, trying to just deal with, you know, the creatures that I don't want in there, like the squash bugs and stuff like that. I mean, I enjoy weeding and cleaning, and I enjoy, you know, the planting part of it. I enjoy the harvesting. I mean, but probably when I get things that, you know, are causing problems in my garden, that's my least favorite, because it's hard sometimes to always know exactly how to care for it and treat it. You know what I mean? And so that is probably the one thing that I hate, you know, is when I struggle with trying to keep things, you know, just the way I want it. So.
Well, on the flip side, what's your favorite?
Definitely the picking and the harvesting. I love doing that. I have little baskets I take out there, and I love sorting and then just filling my wheelbarrow with all my little things and coming in and saying, oh, this is what I got from it for today. I mean, you know, I would say that's probably my favorite. When I'm not getting to do that, probably my other favorite thing is getting to sort through and decide what to plant. Looking at seed catalogs and coming up, you know, with, you know, different things that are out there that maybe I haven't tried and seeing if it'll work good in this area. I really enjoy just looking at seeds and experimenting and trying to find new and different things, you know what I mean, to put in the garden.
Yeah, I'm nodding my head. And I'm determined to do a better job of that last year, because somehow, I don't know how it came out, but I did not have any arugula seeds this summer. Like, I planted one batch in the early spring, and then I went to plant a fall batch, and then I couldn't find arugula seeds in the store, and I don't know, I just didn't order any, and I am just like, how could I not have enough arugula seeds? So I'm really going to work on planning next year better and making sure I have all those seeds. So, and then the other thing I'm thinking, so, like, I've written a couple of posts on, like, my favorite tools to have in the garden. And I think baskets is so important. I think I'm going to put that back in the top 10 list, because what you're collecting things with, we have one that you can run right under the, you know, for like cleaning beets or carrots or potatoes, that you can put right under the hose or the spigot and stuff that can get wet. And then my other baskets, I think part of it's because we lost two of our baskets that we've been using for like 10, 15 years now. This summer, and so I'm really, it's like really coming, like I need to find some new collecting baskets. So I like the way that you talked about. I just love bringing my baskets in and.
Well, and I hadn't heard of that. I would love to hear about the basket you talk about. So you put the, because that's the one thing I, you know, when you pick your root vegetables, like your beets and carrots and stuff like that, I don't like bringing them in the house till they're cleaned off and getting all that, the soil off. And I guess what you're saying, it's a basket you put them in and it's almost like a big strainer, it sounds like.
Exactly. That's a great way to describe it. Actually, it's just like this flat red, well, it's like a wire coated like a red plastic type of thing. I don't know. And it's just, It almost looks like graph paper in a way. It's just kind of flat and it's got two wooden handles and it's about 1.5 by 1 foot maybe. And it's just the perfect size. It's heavy duty. And yeah, and you can just run it right under any kind of water spigot and I like to wash them outside before you bring them in the house too, for sure.
Yeah.
So, how about what's the best gardening advice you've ever received, Carrie?
Probably the best, and it's the one even my dad does to me often, because I get so super excited when the weather just starts to warm up to want to go out there and start planting stuff. And the best gardening advice is to be patient and not to get overly anxious and go out there too soon, because there have been seasons where I've planted stuff and I'm like, oh, it's ready, it's time, you know, and I even have, like, my starter plants that I have inside are looking good and ready, and I start to go out there and put them out there, and then, oh my goodness, we have another freeze and I lose all of them, you know, and I think that's, for me, is the big thing is, you know, just being patient. I mean, gardening period is patience, because, seed in the soil and I'm like, nothing's coming up yet, you know, and I want to start digging to see if something's happening, you know, or whatever. And like I say, my dad's probably the best. He's like, just be patient. Just be patient. It just takes time, you know, and I would have to say that's my best gardening advice, you know, is be conscientious of your seasons and, you know, even when you've planted, you know, be conscientious of just letting them have the time they need, you know, and I think that's probably why gardening is good for me, because, you know, as you said, I do like to be creative and do lots of things. And probably that's one of the things I'm like, oh, now I'm done with this. Now let's move to this and try this. And I get to moving in projects too quickly. And it's good for me to learn to slow down. And gardening helps me do that.
Wow, this is excellent. So a couple of questions. Like, so you're in Albuquerque. I guess I didn't realize it freezes there. Is it because it's like such a high altitude? Because isn't that close to the border, like with Texas and stuff? Like, isn't that southern New Mexico?
It's in the middle of the state of New Mexico, Albuquerque is. And yeah, we're up where I'm at is more in the valley, but we do have the Sandia Mountains here and everything. We are at an elevation of over 5,000. So we do get winter and we do get freezes. The great thing about it, like what I'm doing right now, some of my things, like you were talking about the corn, I harvested my corn a month ago. So some of the air things that, you know, are pretty much finished, like the corn and stuff like that, I'm kind of prepping the soil and I can actually put in a really nice, like when you were talking about some of the things like spinach, arugula, I can't plant those or really get a good crop of those in the summer, but they do really well early spring and then late fall. So I can, again, plant some of those things and get me a nice fall crop, because really we don't get our first freeze till about middle, late November. So I can still get a couple of things like that in, you know, before we get something, you know, that freezes where it just slows everything down. But we don't get like where you're at. We definitely don't get as much winter, like herbs like oregano, rosemary, lavender. Those will pretty much stay green and I can pick from them. Sometimes if it's not super bad, I can even get sage year round. They never freeze.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So I mean, if we can cut this out or if you don't, but I have a listener who asked me about frosting. It's like she's really struggling. She's in New Jersey, and she's a newer gardener, and she's struggling with frosting. I'm not really exactly sure what she's struggling with, but do you have anything to say about frosting? Maybe you can help, like, me understand even what she's confused with, or...
Like what do you mean, frost?
Yeah, like that's what I... Her question was just, like, I'm struggling to understand frosting. And so I wrote her back and I was like, well, there's your first frost that you get in the spring that you have to wonder about, like, what to plant. Don't put something in the ground before that. And then I was like, there's your frost date in the fall that you're going to get that, okay, you know, things have to be harvested by. But I don't know. I need to talk to her. I need to find out specifically, maybe.
You know, the one thing that it's old school, but a farmer's almanac is amazing.
Yeah.
And those are good to even look at to know kind of understanding for your area frost dates, you know, because it shows the general history of when the freezes usually typically hit. And then, like I say, I think that's the thing that's even tricky. I went to college in Oklahoma, and that's where I met my husband, and I was there for 14 years. And I can definitely tell you, gardening and learning to garden and understanding how to garden was so different, honestly, there from here. And I think that's the tricky thing, you know. I think I commend you in what you do, because I mean, gardening is so different by area. Well, that's even why, like, you know, look at seeds and think about them. You know, it shows those colorful little grids, you know, on, you know, to say, you know, here's kind of the time frame that's good for planting this. I mean, look at those and really, you know, understand your area and where you're at is probably the best thing I could say, you know, to do. But like I say, I mean, frost dates, understanding those, that's kind of, you know, I think something the Farmer's Almanac that would even be helpful for looking at that.
And exactly, you hit on that, because she's from Florida. And she's moved to New Jersey, so she's having, mm-hmm, you know, that piece too. And then the other thing that Mike and I can't remember if I was on the Farmer's Almanac online or where I saw it, but like the other thing we hadn't really looked at as much, or there was some crop that he was like, oh, because the Farmer's Almanac talked about the phases of the moon. And that's something, mm-hmm, a lot of people don't think, yep, about, the, how that can affect when you're supposed to plant and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's a great resource. Awesome. I'm so glad I asked you that. So what's your favorite tool? Like, if you had to move and couldn't, you know, live without, or what do you haul over to your other place with you? To your little sanctuary?
That's what I loved that question, and I had to think about, because I am not, I mean, I have a few, like, you know, a little spade and, you know, a hoe, but even I don't like to weed even with a hoe, because to me, all the hoe does is kind of loosen the root of the weed so that it can just reestablish itself and keep growing. I'm just like, I like it out. So I pull weeds and, you know, toss them out of my garden. So, my favorite tool is a wheelbarrow.
That's what I said. My original, when I first came up with this question, I was like, well, my answer would be a shovel. And then I thought, nope, mine is a wheelbarrow.
Uh-huh. Because when I go into the barn or the shed area where I store everything, I think mentally try to think, what am I going to need as I'm headed out there? Because it's not that far from, you know, where the shed and wheelbarrow is to my garden area, but it's still that walk back and forth. So I like to try to get everything I need, put it in the wheelbarrow, go out there, or when I'm picking or harvesting, you know, you can sort and fill it and pull it and then just wheel it all back. I mean, wheelbarrows are amazing.
I think so too. And like, I'm also thinking, like, I talked to somebody who said that they had three of them, because I think it's true. It's kind of like the basket I was saying, like, I want a wheelbarrow that's just for pulling weeds and just for, like, so that I can, like, pull weeds for a week and not have to empty the wheelbarrow or go deal with it. Like, you need to sit down there and whatever day, and then once it's full, I can get rid of it or something. Or, like, that's one thing I always struggle with, is where to put the weeds or whatever I'm pulling out. And then our garden, like, I feel like we are never going to have to worry about a flood, because we're, like, at the top of the hill. And Mike put our garden at the, like, it's not a big hill, But when you forget your pruners or you forget one little thing and you got to go back up that hill just to get it, or like I always talk about a lot, like I want a kitchen salad garden because I'm not going to go down to the garden to grab a radish or that tomato that's just ripe sometimes when I'm right in the middle of dinner as an afterthought thinking. And then his mini farm that he built even further. And he's just been complaining this summer a few times about, oh my gosh, am I going to go down there again? What did I forget? Or he gets down there and the wheelbarrow's up at the house or... Totally. So.
Yep. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah. How about, what's your favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
The one that when you asked me that question, I thought about, and probably the one I do the most is like what we call here a calabacitas, and it's basically almost like a New Mexican stir fry. You take corn and squash and zucchini and you put a tomato in it and your chili, and it's done, you know, in a little heated up olive oil, and you just fry it in your skillet that way, almost like just like I say, like a vegetable stir fry. That's probably my favorite because I don't really follow a general recipe, and whatever I'm getting out, you know, of my garden at that time, I kind of do it and put it in there. And it's so fun, you know, like to get a whole bunch of different things and then slice it all up and just throw it in the skillet, you know, like that. And so that's probably my favorite thing to make because I'll just sit down and eat that, you know, for dinner.
That sounds good. I like that. How about a favorite internet resource? Like, where do you like to surf on the web?
Oh, God. I know. I had to think about, you know what? When I have a question, I just type in a question and try to find something. But the one resource that I probably try when I'm putting in a question that when I look for something is probably different areas from their county extension offices, because usually they are the most reputable resource that I feel like is going to have, you know, good answers to questions and things that I need. I don't just use our local one because, you know, like I say, you can actually find articles and stuff that different extension offices in different areas have, you know, written stuff, you know, and all. And in fact, it was even where, back to my whole squash bug story, you know, I did a whole search because I thought there's got to be something out there, you know. And of course, being organic gardening, you don't want to put, you know, any kind of pesticides or anything like that. But I thought it was funny because there was actually, it was an extension, I can't remember what state it was, but it was an extension agents or an extension office article that was on a website talking about dealing with that. And they talked about how even, you know, the non-organic pesticides cannot kill these creatures. And I was like, oh, well, that makes me feel better. but I love probably them the most is just using that as my resources, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Extension agents, and I don't know, I was just doing a bunch of research on different extension agents, so yeah, I like to that's kind of the kind of thing I like to go do too. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or a blog or a website or something you can recommend?
You know, I pick up all sorts of different articles and books and stuff like that. I'm trying to look at it and find, I pulled it up. There's a magazine actually that we get, and it's a local one called Edible that's written here for the New Mexico area. And it has great local food and gardening and things like that in it. And it's a really great magazine that I enjoy. Probably the one that when it just goes to magazines that I get a lot of information from. They even, one of them, I told my husband, there was an article in one of them recently even done about here in Colorado. They do what's called at one of the universities, it's a grain school where you can go and experiment and learn about different grains and cooking with different grains. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to do this so bad. but it was an article in that magazine. So I think that this magazine's done a really neat
And it even talked about women in the New Mexico and even in the local area that are really beginning to have a more a larger impact on farming and gardening in this area, and how they're really trying to do more things to make women and have more incentives in gardening, because they say women are natural nurturers, and they're finding that women in the gardening industry are, you know, really making an impact in the small gardens and stuff like that. And so, like I say, it's articles like that I really enjoy getting out of this magazine.
So there's like an edible from, like, I'm looking at their website, like there's, it looks like there's an edible Nashville and an edible New Hampshire and an edible New Orleans and Oh, look at edible Boston's got a nice peace sign right on the front. I like that. Edible Alaska, edible Aspen. Wow. I don't know that anybody's recommended that. I don't remember it, but cool.
Well, and they even have tips in there on canning. There was one article one time about different types of canning, and they talked about in one of them doing like a get together with friends. And if one person has, I thought about it with all my cucumbers, and doing like a pickling get together. So you don't, you know, all of you work together making pickles and then split up the number of jars. And it's like, they call it a pickling party. So like I say, it's a really great magazine. And like you just said, I think the cool thing about it is that whoever is the writer or does the issue for that area is really good about writing articles that really pertain to, you know, things in that area.
So, and is it an actual like hard copy, like paper, or is it just online?
Mm-hmm. It's a paper. Yeah. It's a magazine you can get. It's an actual magazine. They do have of their, you can get the editions online, but they also have the magazines themselves. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to look into that. Cool. So do you have any business advice? I know you don't really have a gardening business, but my listeners, like, I call them green future growers, because even if they're, some of them want to become market farmers, but some of them have seed companies, or some of them are educators, or some of them run the community garden, or somebody, you know, they just have all these businesses related. And since you must have some business, you know, from running your bed and breakfast, like, I don't know, just general business advice or anything to share that way?
Business advice. You know, the biggest thing from even running my bed and breakfast is, I think one thing is business advice is probably sometimes being really careful that you don't let your passion become your job completely, because then it loses its passion. And I think that's the thing, like with my gardening, I'm looking into, because I do love growers markets, and I've told, because I'm looking at actually expanding my garden next year and everything. And I've told my husband, I said, you know, I think I want to actually see and check into maybe doing some of the farmers markets and stuff, you know, and doing some stuff like that. But it is going to be, because I think that's probably the trickiest thing, even with my bed and breakfast, that I had to be, have had to be really careful with, is I do enjoy cooking and all of the things that kind of come with a B&B, but then it's almost made it where I don't enjoy it, because it's what is my talent and my love and my passion has become so much of a job that I've almost lost the love for it. So I've had to be creative and figure out how to keep what I enjoy not just being a job.
That's fantastic, because I always worried about that, the artist in me, like, and I kind of like, I almost am like so stubborn, like once, as soon as I have to do something, I almost don't want to do it. And it's like all of a sudden the resistance is just huge. Whereas if I'm doing it for myself, and you know, Elizabeth Gilbert talks about that. Don't let your creativity, in her book Big Magic, you know, don't put that on your creativity. Don't put that pressure. Find a way to make your money some other way so that you can remain creative. But, you know, we all have to make a living. And so there's different things. And just, well, what, like, so I guess, I kind of asked you about the biggest challenge to the bed and breakfast is just, is it being on call like 24/7? Because, like, I guess I'm just thinking, like, that's almost like a value-added product in some ways. Like, if somebody's a market farmer, I know a lot of people who have successful market farms have talked about having events there and, like, you know, pizza days or, you know, food gatherings or yoga on the farm or all these different things. And I was thinking, when you first started talking, I thought, oh, I wonder if people are going to think, oh, maybe that would be a great idea, have a bed and breakfast at my market. Maybe it would be the opposite, like dinner and bed and dinner.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, but I don't know.
And I mean, I think that's the thing, is just not to be so resistant and intimidated that when it does become overwhelming, to bring other people in to help you with it, because that's my other problem, is because I am so capable in some ways that it's really easy for me to say, oh, I can do that. Oh, I can do that. You know, and that's when I think I've probably made the biggest mistake of my, what I enjoy becoming a job, because I'm trying, oh yeah, I can do it. But there's a certain point where it's like, maybe you can do it, but don't let it go. You know what I mean? Because then you're taking on so many things that you're not even enjoying it. You're just working yourself to pieces.
I completely understand establishing those boundaries, having to say no, and just different things like that. All right. Yeah. Well, here we go. Final question. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, Kara, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Well, I mean, and because my background initially is education and then raising my own kids, I remember even when I first got into teaching and I taught first graders, how when I would sit down and show kids, you know, I always was in the classroom, we make our own butter and stuff like that. How many kids didn't even know milk came from a cow, you know? And I think there's sometimes an undereducation or realization to even our young people as to the value of where our food comes from and how important it is to take care of our environment, you know, and things like that. And I see our little, where our bed and breakfast is, it is a downtown area, but there's a woman that's opened up some space in her property where we have like a little community garden. My daughter's going to school up in Gunnison, Colorado, and they have community gardens there that are really big. And I think that is something that I would love to see more, where communities get together about, you know, growing food and understanding where our food comes from and how valuable it is to take care of our earth, and just educating this young generation to understand the value of that, because I, you know, that's where it really needs to start more than anywhere else, I think, is with our young people. And, you know, we look at our education and our funding and so much. In fact, it's even why I wanted to homeschool my kids, because I saw the schools are so much anymore about testing and things like that, that just letting our kids understand and know, you know, really the importance and value of understanding the earth and valuing it and protecting it, I think sometimes is not being taught to this generation as much. And it needs to start there. It really does, because they're the ones that are going to be coming up and, you know, being in charge of taking care of our earth. And so that's probably the thing I would say, you know, community gardens, educating the young generation to, you know, to gardening and caring for the earth.
We've been talking for a long time, and you have just shared tons of golden seeds and just been super, just thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I enjoy your podcast. I enjoy, you know, hearing other people's journey and figuring this out. And I really am enjoying, you know, the more people doing the quote backyard garden, you know, thing, because this is where it's going to start for us to really have, you know, some coming back just to the natural part of life. So.
Sure. I think so too. I mean, I think the more backyard gardens we get going, and I just, I don't know. I just feel like food has tasted so, anything I've been getting from the store lately, it's just been so bland. Like I can't even, I feel so blessed that I have so much homegrown produce that I have access to. So I think that's a perfect tip right there, is just and you're going to inspire people right there to grow their own backyard garden. So tell them one more time, like, how they connect with you, where they find your Facebook group, and then we'll say goodbye.
Yeah, so I have a group page that's called Organic Living for Moms. That's one of the best places to just personally really connect with me. They could also go to our Bed and Breakfast page. We have a Facebook page for the Downtown Historic Bed and Breakfast in Albuquerque. That's one place that, like I say, you can also connect with me as well. But the one, the organic living, that's the one where I'm probably really pushing out a lot of my recipes and things I'm doing in my garden. And like you talked about the chair and just some of, you know, the fun projects I, you know, am passionate about and love doing. And that's probably one of the best places to go to really be able to just connect with me.
Thank you so much for sharing with us today, Kira. You have a great Saturday. I so appreciate you being patient and putting up with my change today. And thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. This is fun. I really enjoyed this.
Cool.
It was great to visit with you.
Thanks. Yeah, I love podcasting.
Hey, Green Future Growers. Did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So you just, it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got, all in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today. Would you like your friends and neighbors to create an organic oasis too? Would you like others in your area to learn about earth-friendly practices for their gardens and yards? If so, we would love it if you would share the Organic Gardener podcast with your local community or college radio station today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.